This Biz News briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to transactional banking with simple, transparent fees.
It's Wednesday, the 29th of January, and this is your Biz News briefing. Now, the U.S. suspension of foreign aid is already having widespread implications for the South African health industry. Many clinics that provide antiretroviral treatment are dependent on U.S. foreign aid for their funding, and more specifically, they receive that funding from the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. Clinics in South Africa are already closing down, and there's certainly a state of panic in the health sector in South Africa. I spoke to Mia Milan, who is the editor-in-chief of Becky Sisa Center for Health Journalism.
What we've seen in South Africa so far is that quite a few HIV clinics that provide treatment to gay and bisexual men and transgender people have closed down. They've received notices which the US government calls stop work orders. So we've seen in Cape Town a Greenpoint clinic, we've seen a clinic in Hillbrow and several in the Eastern Cape and others in Johannesburg as well. So that means that those people who get their treatment from those clinics, which are run by civil society organizations, won't be able to get it. What the PEPFAR funding, PEPFAR is the AIDS fund of the United States government, what it doesn't mean in South Africa is that we won't have medication. The health department pays for all the medication and HIV medication in South Africa, but it doesn't fund the salaries of those civil society organizations, the doctors, the nurses, the pharmacists, who provide a lot of this medication. And if you interrupt your HIV medication, there are two serious things which happens. If you have HIV, then it means you become more vulnerable to falling ill with things like TB and pneumonia. But the other important thing that happens is that you become, it becomes quite likely that you can spread the virus. So HIV medication doesn't just treat you, it also reduces the amount of virus in your body to such low levels that you can't transmit the virus through sex. And that is one of the main reasons why you've seen the spread of HIV slow down, is access to treatment. But if you stop treatment, then people who are infected become much more likely to transmit the virus again.
Is this tantamount to a catastrophe?
Well, you know, in South Africa, about 17% of the money that we get from PEPFAR goes directly to the health department. The rest goes to civil society, so non-profit organizations that help with HIV treatment, with testing, all of those things. Of course, it is a catastrophe when you just take away that money. Fundraising takes a lot of time, and there's only so much money in the world to fund these things. Now, PEPFAR's contribution to access to treatment in Africa and South Africa, of course, has been enormous. If you just take away that money, then you take away life-saving treatment from people. Now, the U.S. government did announce yesterday that some, what it calls life-saving treatment and very urgent assistance for foreign organizations, that it will issue waivers for those organizations. But there's a lot of confusion as to whether that pertains to HIV treatment. And there's part of that announcement includes a bit that says if an organization deals with gender issues, and by gender issues, Donald Trump means transgender people, then it won't qualify. Now, all these clinics that you've seen closing down in South Africa serve the transgender population as well. So it remains to be seen whether there will be any mercy, unlikely, for clinics like that.
Editorial contributor John Mattison adds to the story, again, pointing to the fact that waivers have come to the fore, and John says that there is a waiver in place for HIV medication. But again, to reiterate what Mia is saying, John says there is confusion across the board.
Well, it's a fast-moving story, and last night, that's Tuesday in Washington, the new Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, issued a waiver. So it might be okay again, but it's not at all clear. And the people who have to implement this are not sure of their ground. So there's a lot of confusion in the American media and among the American public. So obviously there is among the South African distributors and implementers.
When you say that they came forward with a waiver, are they retracing the directive to freeze the funding?
Well, they're in a limited way. They're excluding antiretroviral drugs for HIV/AIDS patients. But, as I don't know if you followed, but as with the other executive orders that President Trump has made, the devil is in the detail, and these are often very sweeping things. And people in government are themselves trying to figure out what it means exactly. And so agencies, out of an abundance of caution, are closing things down until there's clarity. The other thing is, as you know, South Africa pays for a lot of its own medications, but the Americans through PEPFAR pay for a lot for distribution, for marketing, for information services, and for nurses and so on. So it's a complicated thing, and it's hard to really know how many people will be affected, how soon.
John, in terms of, as you say, with the uncertainty, clinics are closing down until they have that certainty. Now, when that comes to treatment, in terms of providing antiretrovirals, isn't the number one need that there is regularity of treatment and that you don't break the cycle?
Absolutely correct. There are already medical experts warning that people could die, because if you interrupt the treatment and then resume it, who knows when, breaking the cycle is dangerous.
As John says, this is a fast-moving story and confusion does prevail. And as BizNews, we will continue bringing updates as the information comes to the fore. In other news, police have raided the offices of two DA councillors, namely JP Smith and Xanthia Limburg. Opposition parties are calling for suspensions of the two DA councillors, but Helen Ziller, DA federal chair, says that they will not take action until they understand the situation and understand whether there is a genuine case against the two DA councillors. And again, rest assured, as the DA, that this is not just a political hit squad.
Jordan Hill Lewis is the mayor of Cape Town, and he has had to determine whether to suspend, I think so far, it is four councillors who have been accused of infringements that might warrant suspension. And on each occasion, he has looked at the prima facie evidence against that person. Now, I'll take the example of the most common one, and that is the example of Malusi Boy, who was arrested and now charged on several quite serious counts of corruption involving housing projects. After Malusi's office was searched, the police had a discussion with Jordan, and Jordan said, as a courtesy, could I know what the prima facie evidence is, untested evidence is, that you have against him, so that I can see whether this is a political hit squad or whether there is some real substantive stuff to which he has to answer. The police weren't obliged to do that, but they said, yes, there's a lot of substantive stuff. And untested evidence, but prima facie evidence, convinced the mayor that there was a serious case that Malusi had to answer, and he therefore suspended him. In another case, somebody was accused of rape, and Jordan was convinced that there was no prima facie evidence, and there was a very convincing argument that it might have been a revenge motive. And so he said, we'll wait for the court case to run its course. We won't be the jury and judge. It's a criminal trial, and the person was acquitted. So Jordan made the right decision. So all I know is that Jordan looks at what evidence there is, and he's doing exactly the same with the JP Smith case. In the J.P. Smith case, he's asked the police to extend to him the same courtesy as they extended to him with Malusi Boy. And he says before he takes a decision to suspend, he's got to check whether this is a political hit squad or whether there's something genuine. And he then says, give me a briefing on the prima facie evidence that still has to be tested in court, that is untested now, but I, as the responsible mayor, have to see if he's got a genuine case to answer. If you compare every other case that has been raised around issues, we demand that people be suspended when we believe there's prima facie evidence of wrongdoing, either in a past job or whatever there is, as, for example, with Minister Ntshavheni. And we are very wary of being mindful that political hit squads in politics are not unusual.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
And in big news for Bitcoin, the central bank governor of the Czech Republic says he is looking to introduce crypto as a reserve currency. He's looking to deploy about 7 billion euros into that reserve currency status for crypto. I spoke to James Corr from Simple B, and he says this is absolutely fundamentally a change in institutional standpoint towards cryptocurrency. And it's really that institutional underpin that crypto is waiting for, or Bitcoin is waiting for rather, to go from that $100,000 level to that $1 million level. Let's take a listen.
It's very big news. It's a little bit of rumor at this stage because the vote is tomorrow. But it seems like the Czech finance minister understands Bitcoin, or the Reserve Bank, Reserve Bank governor understands Bitcoin. And he's, given us this little tidbit of information just before the vote, which is tomorrow. So yeah, we could see them allocating as much as 5% of their budget, which is 7 billion euros, to Bitcoin.
Do you think that will drive a very positive surge as an endorsement of Bitcoin?
Well, I think if you read his statement and you have a look at what he's saying, he's basically saying, let's be the first, because if we manage to be the first, we'll set the trend. It'll drive huge investment in our economy, and it'll also help us set the stage for the rest of the world. So he's basically saying, Trump is slow. Let's go faster. It definitely would drive a lot of positive growth for the currency in terms of value. But global adoption, institutional adoption, is what sits between $100,000 Bitcoin and $1 million Bitcoin. So it's a very big moment for the currency in terms of, or the currency of Bitcoin in terms of valuation as well.
South African Reserve Bank Governor Lesetša Ganyogo has made waves on social media where he has referenced mutton reserves. We're going to give you a little context to the story and take you back to the panel discussion at the World Economic Forum, where Lesetša Ganyogo was a panelist and he was asked about whether the South African Reserve Bank was ready to introduce crypto or Bitcoin as a currency reserve, and this was his response.
Governor, do you want to comment on that? Do you see South Africa going towards a Bitcoin strategic reserve?
No, can't quite say. I want to distinguish between the technology that underpins this asset and the assets themselves. The regulator, we do not regulate technology. we regulate activity. Mm-hmm. So we are technology agnostic. Right. So that's why I had said it's not for governments to decide which assets or which products mm-hmm. the consumer should be using. So the technology is very useful. Give you the idea. We piloted a blockchain technology in our payment space with finality in central bank money, and we were able to settle transactions that we settle in a whole day in 46 minutes. We were able to do that. So the technologies could be useful, and we would look at that, and I don't think that is a problem. I would have a significant problem with a lobby that says governments should hold this asset or hold that asset without what the strategic intent of government is. Because, you see, there is a history to gold. There was once a gold standard. Currencies were pegged to gold. But if we now say that, okay, bitcoins, okay, what about platinum? What about coal? Why don't we hold strategic beef reserves or mutton reserves or apple reserves? Why Bitcoin? So it's a public policy issue that we have got to be engaged in, and I would caution against the move then that would say there is an industry with a particular interest in a particular product, and we would like to impose it on society and say society must hold this as a reserve. I would have a fundamental problem with it.
So why Bitcoin reserve and not beef reserves and mutton reserves? Anyone wants to comment on that?
Well, I think that, if you like Neil Ferguson is here, he has a great book on the ascent of money, and he's a historian, and so many things have been used as money over the years. I think it's pretty, this is still maybe a new idea, but I think it's clear at this point that, Bitcoin is a better form of money than gold. It is provably scarce, just like gold, but it's more portable and divisible. So you can actually use it, has higher utility, I would say. And it was the best performing asset of the last 10 years. And so for store of value, I think it's going to be important for governments to hold this over time. It might start with being 1% of their reserves, but I think over time it'll come to be equal to or greater than gold reserves.
James Corr offers more context after his conversation with Alec Hogg. Alec spoke to the South African Reserve Bank governor directly after that panel discussion. Here's what he has to say.
I think it's interesting to hear him say that. And then, Alec from BizNews then chatted to him afterwards and he said, oh, he was joking. He's not being very serious and nobody has a sense of humor. But I've never known a Reserve Bank governor with a sense of humor. I thought it was part of the role not to have a sense of humor. But, where he actually stands remains to be seen. But we very much hope that he will change his opinion and rapidly because, it is a matter of first mover advantage in this space. And the market has the methodology has been tested in institutional adoption. So we see companies like MicroStrategy and other companies all over the world copying that play. The next step is the reserve banks and who's going to move first. So very interested to see his take and to hear from people who know him closer that he was maybe pulling one on over everybody at Davos.
And anyone who does know the South African Reserve Bank governor well knows that he has a dry sense of humor. Now, turning our attention to the markets, ASML, which is a tech company headquartered in the Netherlands, got caught up in the sell-off in tech stocks on Monday. But today it issued its results, fourth quarter results, and the market was pleasantly surprised. Our colleagues at Bloomberg have the full story.
Charlotte, what stood out to you from these numbers?
Well, Tom, I mean, it's really a beat across the board for ASML in this quarter. You've got CEO coming out and saying, record year, record quarter. And what will be kind of relief for investors who are really shaken by Monday's sell-off is that ASML really doubling down on this AI story. I mean, looking at some of the remarks, the CEO of ASML saying, you know, the AI is really the driver of their kind of bookings beat for this quarter. We saw net bookings over 7 billion euros, and 3 billion of that was for ASML's EUV machines, which are the cutting-edge lithography machines used to create the highest tech chips that are powering AI. So you've really got ASML saying, you know, this is where the opportunity is. We expect demand to stay really strong. They kept their 2025 net sales guidance unchanged, and saying, you know, there's real opportunity given this kind of strong demand for AI at the top of the range. So, you know, some relief for investors who are kind of shaken by the sell-off earlier on Monday.
Yeah, that 3 billion number for the EUVs is pretty remarkable, isn't it, given that some analysts had expected 1 billion for that number. We've heard TSMC, they've upgraded their guidance around CapEx spend. They are, of course, a major buyer of these EUVs and lithography machines from ASML. On the China question, I mean, Christophe Fouquet, the team there have been talking about this for some time, the fact that they've had to make up for a shortfall of orders in the last couple of years. That's starting to come to an end. What is the China part of the piece of the pie, do you think, for ASML going forward? How much clarity do we have on that now?
So this was interesting, you know, looking through these initial numbers, we see that sales this quarter are down to, sales to China, down to about 27% of ASML sales, and they were nearly half of sales in the previous quarter. So we really see the kind of feed through of the pressure, the export restrictions coming from the US to, you know, are having an impact on ASML's sales to China. I mean, earlier this week you had the Dutch Prime Minister saying we expect the Trump administration to keep pushing on those export restrictions and keep exerting pressure on ASML to really, you know, slow down sales to China in the interests of national security. And you know, this quarter we see that big drop off. So that was something that stood out for us, and is definitely something that investors will be watching.
Microsoft thinks that China's DeepSeek may have accessed OpenAI's technology before its big breakthrough. Microsoft and OpenAI have launched a probe into DeepSeek and into individuals connected with DeepSeek.
Microsoft and OpenAI are investigating whether Chinese AI startup DeepSeek obtained unauthorized data output from OpenAI technology. For more, we're joined by Robert Lee, senior analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence, who's been tracking all of this for us. How significant, Rob, in your view, is this development?
Okay, well, the thing that really surprised markets and also, you know, tech companies in the US over the last week or so has been DeepSeek's disclosure in a paper they published on their website that the training costs on one of the latest iterations of their model was as low as, or just under $6 million. So that's approximately, you know, 50 or so times less than the big US tech platforms. That's what's caused the upset. But today's breaking news, and obviously, you know, the US is the leader in global AI at the moment. DeepSeek's been name-checked by the president. The US doesn't want, any country or any company, especially a company coming out of China, eating its lunch. So there's been a great deal of scrutiny on these, you know, this claim of $6 million cost. You know, I think, as I've said previously to you, our knee-jerk reaction is we know there is no reason to fundamentally question what DeepSeek is doing, but have they been cutting corners? OpenAI does allow developers to access their models to use in their external apps for a fee. So the allegation is that DeepSeek has been doing this to cut corners and potentially boosting the performance of its model. Again, this is an allegation at the moment, but obviously it's been taken very seriously at the very highest levels of government in the US.
Yeah, certainly. We're hearing that from members of course, the Trump administration, as well as reportedly Microsoft and OpenAI themselves. So those, and you nod to this, the geopolitical tension and kind of rising around this, and the fact that Trump himself name-checked DeepSeek earlier this week in a speech. Look, we've seen efforts to ban TikTok. Is DeepSeek safe in terms of facing a potential ban in the US?
I think worst case scenario, yeah, that remains an option. It's obviously still early days into this story. You know, they need to do their investigation, see what evidence there is or not. But, you know, if you cast your mind back, only about 2 weeks or so ago, we saw the Department of Defense in the US blacklist Tencent, China's largest listed technology platform. So, and obviously the ongoing TikTok saga, although that looks to be potentially resolved if a US buyer can be agreed upon. But again, you know, the US is the global leader in AI at the moment, both in the hardware and software side. China has successfully narrowed the gap. But, you know, the US is not going to allow this company to impinge on its territory. And I think, you know, at worst case scenario, we could see some sort of restrictions put on DeepSeek access in the States, and at worst, a ban. So that's a distinct possibility.
And that brings us to the end of this Biz News briefing. We'll be back tomorrow with more local and global news.
This Biz News briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.